And now, it's time for Southern California's sports fishing voice. Let's talk hookup. For the next 2 hours, join Pete Gray, Rock Cod Rick Maxa, Corey Sandin, and this week's special expert guest for fishing information, new techniques to catch more fish, and the most current scoop on what's happening in the water. Let's Talk Hookup is sponsored in part by Yamaha Outboards. Reliability starts here. By Ford, the official truck of Let's Talk Hookup, and Shimano Rods and Reels. Fish with the best. Shimano. Get ready for the fastest 2 hours on radio with the hosts of Let's Talk Hookup, Pete Gray, Rock Cod Rick Maxa, and Corey Sandin.
Good morning, anglers, and welcome to Let's Talk Hookup. I'm Pete Gray with Rock Cod Rick Maxa. We're live in the world headquarters of Let's Talk Hookup right here in Point Loma, next to the San Diego Landings in Point Loma here. And we have Jack Webster. Well, Jack has been caught a lot of things, but he is one heck of a fisherman, I can tell you that for sure. And he's going to be talking about fishing and catching fish and more. You stay tuned. This is Let's Talk Hookup, Southern California's sport fishing voice on the Let's Talk Hookup app and radio network.
You've heard all about it. You know the anglers catching fish have it, so what's holding you back? It's a fact. FishDope.com really does help you catch more fish and burn less fuel. FishDope.com is the only fish finding service with a spotter plane along with a crew of top anglers on the water almost every day that report actual locations and catches. You can get daily catch reports from Point Conception to San Martin Island 365 days a year. FishDope.com is for everyone, whether you have your own boat, fish on your friend's boat, or a sport boat. FishDope.com has online planning tools, moon phase, tides, hot bite icons, and more. So bottom line is, if you don't have FishDope.com, well, you're probably missing a lot of bites. Membership costs less than $50 of gas, and that's for the entire year. That's right, 1 year. What a bargain! Plus, use the special code to save $20 on a new FishDope.com membership. Check it out today. FishDope.com. Catch more fish, burn less fuel.
We all need to get around, but we all need something different from our vehicles. Your San Diego County Ford dealers have you covered if you're looking for a new truck this month. Plus, it's SUV season, so they have great deals for everyone. Whether it's a new EcoSport that is nimble and fun around town, or the Ford Explorer that is capable of putting a boat in the water and has seating for seven, Ford has you covered. Ford trucks and SUVs aren't just powerful and legendary. They have the latest technology that helps you seamlessly connect your smartphone and ensure you're safe on the road. Features like Pro Trailer Backup Assist on trucks are truly a game changer at the ramp, helping you back up a trailer by simply turning a knob on the dash and doing the hard work for you. So check out all the great deals during SUV season and save some money on the right gear for you. Learn more at buyfordnow.com or visit your San Diego County Ford dealers today. They'll be glad to hook you up.
Welcome back to Let's Talk Hookup. What a great time, and we're so lucky to get to have Jack in here. Always such a busy guy that a good opportunity to sneak him in here, ask some fishing questions.
Yeah, for sure. Great to have you, Jack.
Hey, good morning, Pete and Ricky. It's good to see you guys.
Great to see you, man.
We're looking right out the window here at water and boats, which I like. I haven't been down here for a while, so I like it.
You used to spend a lot of time down here.
Oh, yeah. I grew up crawling around under the docks and picking mussels off of there and catching opali. So, yep, there's where, yeah.
Yeah. We talked about all the sport boats that you ran, and a lot of the sport boats over the year. Of course, you've been a commercial albacore fisherman here for the last how many years?
Well, I look back on that. I think it was 1981 when I first went to Midway albacore fishing, trolling. Wow. So you asked me that question before we started here. I was on the qualifier and
Qualifier 105
right after Don bought it and was partners with Bill and Frank on Fisherman's Landing.
Wow.
And then
that's like the 80s.
Yeah, it's like 1981.
Wow.
So then I went down and worked on a commercial fishing boat that was being built down in Chula Vista off of E Street. There was a couple of them being built there. When they launched the boat, Frank Chase was building it. And when the boat hit the water, he looked at me. He says, Manito, he says, you are the captain. I go, I kind of looked at him. I said, my son, you're the captain. So that was kind of a shocker, but it was something that ended up really good. So yeah. I can't complain.
God, that's fishing awesome, albacore all the way out at Midway Island, huh?
Well, yeah, you're not exactly by Midway. Midway's warm, you know. It's a lower latitude.
Yeah.
So They just called that the Midway area. You're actually up above it where the, you know, subtropical convergence zone is, where the water gets cooler up above it. But, you know, I think you've been out there. They opened Midway for a while and stuff.
Sure.
So you got the big Trevally and all that stuff there. It's warm water.
Yeah.
But up above that and then out to the west and northwest of that, you know, you got Emperor Seamounts more towards Japan. But, you know, that was the first thing. I think there was... there was a little bit of a fuel subsidy. I don't even know what fuel was then.
Yeah, right.
30 or 40 cents a gallon for diesel, but for some of the West Coast albacore boats to go out there. So some of the real original equipment in the albacore fishery on the West Coast of the United States went out there.
And then you used to offload, you said, in Dutch Harbor, Alaska.
Well, I did go there. There's been very few people that, and that year in particular, if you look at the way, if you look at a globe and you look where the Aleutians is up there and you look where Hawaii is, we were out, I think I was out 82 days that trip. We opted to go to Dutch Harbor, and that's a liability thing too, because if you're running through cooler water, and obviously the further the north you get, the cooler it gets. If you have any kind of refrigeration issues or anything like that, it's going to be less of a problem. When you're going to run south, you're going to get down there towards Hawaii. I think Hawaii is at 22 degrees north latitude, the same as Cape San Lucas. You're going to be running in some hot water.
Yeah.
And so anyway, yeah, we went up there. We were just kids, you know, and we went up there. And I still have a picture of the elbow room, the bar that's there where all those crab fishermen are, and I have it in the house. So when we went into there and we came out of there in July and went back down to the south to where the water temperatures were right for albacore and started fishing from there.
Amazing.
That's cool.
Amazing. Yeah. And then you came back here to San Diego and you ran the Royal Star for several years.
Well, yeah. So that was in the year. That was in 81. So then I went back out to Midway two more years after that on a boat called the Teresa F for a guy who's a local guy here, San Diego, Corky Smithson, ran his boat out to Midway. And then I think it was in the 90s. When I was on the Royal Star all the time, God love him, when Dave Kagawa passed away, Norman's brother, Norman Kagawa, mm-hmm. He was running the Royal Star. Then I got on the Royal Star and started running that thing full time. But in between, I'd run the qualifier prior to that.
Yeah, I remember
you
that.
You know, between the early 80s and the 90s. So I had the best of both worlds. I got to do that. And if I was home, you're young enough, you're strong enough, you have enough energy. You know, I'd come home from doing that stuff, and I'd climb on those boats and do it.
Yeah,
so.
That's cool.
And then, of course, now you own the Millie G, which is a line caught albacore boat that you've been running for how long?
Yeah, I bought the boat, I think, in 1994. It was either 92 or 94. But anyway, yeah, pole and line and troll fishing, jig fishing. So it's all sustainable methods, and it's the, you know, it's how the tuna industry started. That's what they used in the early 1900s, to start catching albacore, whether it was the Japanese, the Italians, or the Portuguese, or Croatians, or anybody, or just like me that rode the bus out here. That's in the early 1900s. That's the way they started fishing and figured out, hey, we're going to put this stuff in a can and do this. So it's tried and true, and it's lived through all the time.
Wow.
That's cool.
Pretty amazing stuff. So you get on the boat here in San Diego and you head north. How do you know where to go? I mean, this is a big ocean, right?
Well, one of the biggest things you have is that if you're going to go fishing with other boats and boats that you work with, you're getting information from them. They're going to go and you try to time it. We're going to go kind of the same time. And in this day and age with satellite pictures, you get an idea. It doesn't have to be exact. It's just kind of like, if I walk out your door of the office here and I think the temperature is going to go up a degree and it doesn't, I mean, that's not the end of the world. You're looking at those satellite pictures. They can be off by a little bit, but it gives you an idea where water is going to develop. Mm-hmm. And you'll see warmer water being pushed in. Or in this day and age, you have plankton images. So you'll see the change in the color of the water through the plankton images.
Is that the chlorophyll image?
Yeah. Plankton, chlorophyll. Yeah, same thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it just depends on plankton blooms. It's the amount of life in that water. And when you get more and more life, it's just, you know, it's feeding on that. So that greener water usually has more life in it, and the bluer water were the fish. So a lot of times you want to see them in close proximity.
Okay.
That's not to say that fish can't be in the greener, you know, plankton-rich, really plankton-rich water, because it can fool you. I mean, it just with one of the variables that goes on. So all of that is kind of like pivotal on whether you have an open sky. Like I'm looking outside right now, we have 100% overcast, and you're not going to get pictures. Now, that the other thing is, a lot of people miss this, is when there's really a lot of moisture in the air. I mean, not even moisture that you see is a form of a cloud. You're going to have a problem with distortion on those pictures. Uh-huh. And sometimes they aren't that good. And usually your best time to get a picture is the middle of the night as opposed to the daytime. So if you're looking through pictures and, okay, it's all clear, well, your nighttime picture a lot of times is going to be the best picture.
Why do you think that is? Because of the humidity in the air?
It could possibly be, yeah. I'm sure somebody has a real scientific answer for that. But a lot of times your best pictures are at nighttime.
Yeah.
And then another thing that's used now, the satellites have radars that bounce down. In other words, it shoots a signal down. And they use this, and don't quote me on this, but somewhere around 33 or 37 miles an hour for wind speeds. What it's doing is it, the signal is seeing the texture of the surface. So if this, if the satellite shoots a signal down, it hits the top of our table here. I'm sitting here next to Ricky. Or social distance correctly from Ricky.
6 feet away from
it'll me. Show that the table is flat. But when you have wind and you start getting chop and stuff on the ocean, that thing is so sensitive that it's picking up the height of that chop. Wow. And it can predict the wind up to a certain speed. I think it's somewhere in there in the 30s, to where then it's going, nah, this is too crazy. We can't figure this out anymore. But it's the same thing for, it's called sea surface height anomalies. So your warmer water and your places where there's currents jammed together, the height of the ocean might be 2 or 3 centimeters higher than the rest of it. So there's pictures that actually show the height of the water is different. So if you have 100% overcast forever, some of those places where real big currents butt together, you'll either have lower water or higher water. And in other words, they're hitting together, so it's actually jamming more water in there and it belongs there, so it's kind of pushes it up a little bit. I mean, just a minute amount, but that comes from those satellites that shoot straight down.
Amazing, wow. Right? Isn't that crazy to think about that they can read a centimeter difference from space, you know, like,
oh yeah,
it's
no,
wild.
No, it's wild. So anyway, yeah, and going back
so
to
So that's when there's overcast, you can look at that.
Yes, and that's like a big picture thing. You know what I'm saying? It's just like, okay, something's starting to develop there, and that's not. And it could be one of the things that you see at the end of the season that's just, okay, well, that's why that fish is there, or it's on the edge of one of those anomalies. It's on the edge of the low water and the high water, and so there's a convergence there, mm-hmm. And so there's something possibly going on there. And when I say possibly, because a lot of times you get fooled, but that's another thing everybody looks at now.
So if they were to, you mentioned two key things, and that's chlorophyll and the water temperature.
Yes.
Shots. If somebody took one of those two away, and they said, Jack, you can only have one of those, which one would you want when you're going albacore fishing?
At the beginning of the year, you'd probably want the chlorophyll.
Oh, interesting.
Simpler.
Yeah.
You know, because that warm water, the bluer water probably is going to come up in temperature.
Yeah.
But if you wanted to see, like, you know, if you wanted to be on what you'd say a hard edge from green water to blue water, you'd want to see that. At least it'd give you an idea early in the season. Temperatures, you know, temperature, like here in San Diego, we live in such a beautiful place, and weather-wise, too. And I've heard people call this, we live in God's country. This is not the same as, like, Oregon and Washington. So if you have a lot of wind on the water, and it's chilly, and you get a good water picture, in other words, an open sky and the satellite sees it, probably that water temperature is going to be pretty much correct. Mm-hmm. See what I'm saying? But when you guys are here by home, like last year, for example, I was looking at it, and there was that yellowfin southwest of the Coronados or west of the Coronados. There was a really distinct green-blue edge there. Then that blue water pocket, when you'd get wide open sky, was pushed up there towards San Clemente. I mean, and that thing was there. I mean, it was just like, oh, look at that thing.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's just like, that's crazy. So,
and where were the fish? On which side of that break?
They were right. They were in the green water.
They were
the yellowfin was, you know, out towards that edge outside the Coronados. And I only went once. I went with a buddy of mine. It was great. He's a good human being. And But I was looking at it because it was pushed up there towards, and I think those guys were catching those bigger bluefin up in that blue water up towards San Clemente.
Interesting.
So, but that yellowfin that a lot of people were on was right out here west-southwest of Point Loma.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Good stuff.
So, yeah.
So green water, blue water, what's holding the bait?
Well, normally there's a lot more bait in the green water. I mean, and we kind of discussed this before we went on the air, is it like you have to think in different dimensions. So, okay, you're driving around and you're looking over the side and your water's blue and it's really clean. Well, what is it down 50 feet? Is there a radical change in the temperature and the water color right there? So you have to think in different dimensions. In other words, you got a vertical dimension. You got a horizontal dimension. So I'm driving along, I'm still in blue water. Well, that could be where the thermocline is, and there's a big change in it. So that bait could be really down there, and at certain times of the day, where it's early in the morning or in the evening, in the afternoon time of day, that bait gets pushed up, and then it's up there. You know, you might see that fish down there on the meters and sonars and stuff like that, but there might be a certain time of day where it does come up in that part of the column and do its thing. So you... normally, all your like on the beach when you're looking at the coast and stuff, you know your water's greener on the beach. You know people talk about it, sea bass and yellowtail fishing. The water rolls over, but those anchovies and sardines and stuff, they're in that real plankton-rich water.
Interesting.
So if you find them in close proximity out at sea where that stuff's around too, if that's the type of bait that's around at that time, then I would say to answer your question, yeah, there's going to be a lot more in the green water than in the blue water.
Oh wow, okay. Yeah. Yeah, so blue water necessarily, like we're always going to go, oh, it's purple, blue, beautiful water. That's not necessarily always the best thing.
Well, and that's the thing, is that right there, I mean, maybe that's where your pelagic fish wants to be, that's on the surface. But your best case scenario is down maybe 40, 50, 60 feet is where you have a transition and a change into a different type of water.
You're not seeing it,
Ricky. You're just looking over the side, you know, so... The thing is, that could very well be a part of it, and that's why that fish is there. So it sticks its nose up, and it wants to come up on the surface. We're like, oh, look at all that. Oh, look, it's all gone. No, it's not all gone. It just went down, you know? So, I mean, it can fool you.
Yeah. So. Well, as you can hear, we have a great show lined up for today. A lot to talk about with Captain Jack Webster here.
So much.
We haven't even talked about the A word yet, right?
The A word.
So much to cover and so much fun. And, yeah, just a great buddy and a guy that's seen it and done it and caught a whole bunch of fish and loves sharing your info. And it's going to be a great time. And if you want to join us, we want to hear from you. Give us a call and Let's Talk Hookup this morning. 833-288-0973. Again, 833-288-0973 is how you reach us on Let's Talk Hookup this morning. And not only are we going to be talking fun and fishing with Jack all morning, we're also giving away such a great prize to one lucky caller at the end of the show today. You're going to get to go fishing on a full day trip on the Liberty at a Fisherman's Landing, get to go fishing with Taro and the boys and get in on some of that great fishing.
Hopefully
once things
soon.
Get up and rolling. Yeah, exactly. A beautiful boat that I know those guys just finished all their maintenance, and that thing is just rearing and ready to go. So look forward to getting to go fishing on the Liberty, and you're going to get to go for free if you're that lucky caller. Again, 833-288-0973. And when we come back, we're going to be taking your phone calls. Lots of great info coming your way. You stay tuned. You're listening to Southern California's Sport Fishing Voice. This is Let's Talk Hookup on the Let's Talk Hookup app and radio network.
This is Greg Stotesbury from AFCO. For more than 58 years, the American Fishing Tackle Company has been recognized as the premier manufacturer of precision-built offshore fishing tackle. AFCO continues this tradition today with an innovative technical fishing clothing line designed and built by fishermen for fishermen. From our next-generation waterproof shorts like Tactical or Stealth to our new anhydrous waterproof jacket and bibs, the entire AFCO clothing line is purpose-built with the latest AFTEC fabrics and features designed to deliver for the demanding angler. To find AFCO products, go to AFCO.com and find a dealer near you.
Have you always wanted a boat but don't want all the hassles? Then you need to join Freedom Boat Club, where you get hassle-free boating. Freedom Boat Club buys the boats, you enjoy them, and they do the rest. Freedom Boat Club takes care of the slip fee, maintenance, insurance, and cleaning. You have access to a fleet of great fishing and family boats ready to go in the water at Mission Bay, San Diego Bay, and 190-plus locations across the world. For more information, check freedomboatclub.com or visit them at Dana Landing and Cabrillo Isle Marina.
Hi there, I'm Hayden from Fastlane Sailing and Kayaking, Southern California's go-to spot for Hobie fishing kayaks right on the water in Mission Bay. Let me tell you, we have big things going on in the shop this time of year. This November marks the 40th year anniversary of Fast Lane Sailing and Kayaking. And as a family-owned and operated business, my family and I would like to thank all of our friends and customers for the support over the decades. We also have the brand new 2020 model year Hobie Fishing Kayaks, introducing new features like the automatically retracting kick-up fins, as well as the revolutionary new Mirage Drive 360, which allows you to rotate and steer your Mirage Drive 360 degrees, giving you 100% control over your fishing kayak. Hobie's also released a new line of more economic options, like the new Mirage Passport 10.5 and 12.0, coming in at only $13.99 and $15.99 respectively, while still including the Hobie Mirage Drive with comfortable raised seats and tons of fishing features. Get down to our shop, Fast Lane Sailing and Kayaking, right on the water in Mission Bay, and see it all for yourself. Or check us out online at fastlanekayaking.com.
Here's John Ireland for Rancho Leonero.
You know, the ranch is unique. It's one of the few places in the world where you can still drive ATVs up the beach. We have fishing from the beach. We have dive trips that we run to Pomo in a number of different spots. Kayaking, of course, has been real big. We were one of the first hotels to introduce kayaking. The ranch is small, you know, it's intimate, it's 34 rooms, so everyone gets to know everyone. The old saying, where everyone knows your name, well, truly at Rancho Leonero, the employees do know pretty darn near all our guests' names. And what's even more interesting is most of the guests know each other's names. Very personal, very intimate, and a special, special environment. 2 miles of beachfront, a mile on either side of the hotel. Rancho Leonero is really the last of the old-style Baja fishing resorts. 1-800-646-2252. 1-800-646-BAJA. And RanchoLeonero.com. I'll personally guarantee your best fishing experience and vacation at Rancho Leonero.
It's time to get excited about fishing, and Point Loma Sport Fishing has everything you'll need. They offer half-day and three-quarter-day trips daily, perfect for families and the novice or seasoned fishermen. Point Loma Sport Fishing also offers overnight to multi-day trips, targeting the best of seasonal catches. Visit their website at pointlomasportfishing.com, where you can purchase tickets online and get more information on the trips available, or call 619-223-1627.
Welcome back to Let's Talk Hookup. Boy, what a great morning this morning. Stoked to be in here talking fishing, yeah. Not talking virus, not talking any BS, man. We're just talking about going fishing, man. That's what I like, buddy.
Yeah, and it's great to have Jack Bank in the studio with us. Hey, want to say congratulations to the CCA calendar winner this month. The winning number, 2737, and they win two Bullbuster bulk spools of monofilament line. So if you are the winner, ccacalifornia.org is your website, or just go to the Facebook page and contact them and claim your prize there. That's 2737 is the big winner. And, of course, I also want to remind you that Point Loma Sport Fishing, right next to San Diego Landings in Point Loma here, is open 7 days a week. They open at 11 o'clock this morning and open till 6 p.m. They have fresh fish, great array of fresh fish, and, of course, all that great smoked fish. And the kitchen's open, too.
I'm sure you mean Point Loma Seafoods, Point Loma Sport Fishing.
Excuse me. Point Loma Sport Fishing. I was thinking
I know you were.
Seafood. So Point Loma Sport Fishing opens 7 days a week, 11 to 6 p.m.
Seafoods, not sport
Point
fishing.
Loma Seafood.
There you go.
Yeah, Point Loma Sport Fishing will open soon.
Yes.
Yeah, I don't know. I have that stuck.
It's all good. Because you want to go sport fishing.
That's right.
And until then, we go to the freshest thing in town.
Yeah, which is Point Loma Seafoods, right next to the San Diego Landings in Point Loma. So check that out. Well, the phones are packed. They want to talk to Jack, Rick.
Are they ever? For sure. Well, why don't we start it off with our good buddy Don calling us from Woodland Hills. Don, thanks for getting us started here on Let's Talk Hookup this morning.
Hey, guys. Good morning. This is really going to be a great show today. I'm really excited. Jack, just did a little Google search on you and your kind of resume of work experience. It's quite impressive. Just signed up for a newsletter from the IPNLF also, just to kind of see what's going on, just as a sport fisherman.
Oh, right on, Don. That's great.
So, and maybe you want to talk about that here in a moment, but my question for you is, what's the difference between sustainable caught, pole and line caught tuna versus the other stuff?
Well, good question. When you use a pole and line, basically it's an 8 to a 12 foot pole with a line on the end of it. And if you're going to go up on a school of tuna or something of that sort, and you identify it to be that, and you start fishing and you're catching that fish, you know what you're catching at that time. So it's very selective. And if, you know, in other types of fisheries and stuff, it's like, oh, we caught a bunch of, you know, a bunch of things that we weren't targeting. Then, you know, you have no control over that. Now, that being said, is that the U.S. fishermen, whether it's us for pole and line or any other fisheries up and down the west coast of the United States, are very highly regulated. And they're always searching the fishermen for things that are going to help their fishery out to be more friendly to the environment. And also so that the end user, people not unlike yourself, Don, if you don't catch all your own fish, have to go buy it at the market, you know where it came from. And the best way to get that is through a U.S. fisherman. So pole and line fishing, whether it be trolling where you're dragging jigs, trolling, you know, if you're going to go out commercial fishing, you're going to have anywhere from 9 to 12 jigs in the water. And you're trolling. The boat's moving at six knots. If you're going to use a pole, you see a school of fish, you slow down, the crew gets in the racks. And this is the way that commercially harvested tuna started in the early 1900s to put fish in a can or to bring fish to market to people that wanted it fresh. So it's something that's been around for a long time and has survived. And the guys that are in families and girls that are still doing it here on the west coast of the United States and in different parts of the world. I mean, there's different parts of the world where they still fish pole and line. I mean, you got, you know, Spain and Portugal, you got South Africa, you have New Zealand has a small fishery there. You have some over in the Maldives, actually a pretty big tuna, yellowfin, and skipjack fishery there.
Pole and line.
Yeah, pole and line.
Really?
Absolutely.
Wow.
And in Africa and different places there, in Angola and places like that, sure. Yeah. So there are different places around, and they're trying to develop it more and more because it is something that does not have a huge effect on the environment.
So clean.
What's the difference between a sustainable fishery and a non-sustainable fishery? Give a couple of examples.
Yeah, you hear those buzzwords all the time, but people that maybe don't know
right.
what that
well,
is.
I think a lot of it when they go in to assess the fishery has to do with bycatch.
Mm-hmm.
You know, are you catching things and are you catching the target species?
Right.
You know, so that's a big part of it. And sustainability has to do also with how much of it are you catching? Okay, so you roll up on a 20-ton school of yellowfin, skipjack, albacore, whatever it may be, and maybe only 10% of that fish is excited to bite.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So you catch a ton of fish out of, you know, so 10% of it out of 10 tons. Mm-hmm. The rest of the school swims away.
Right. You're just picking off the hungry ones.
Sure, exactly. So, and then it also has to do with, you know, stock assessments to see exactly what is there in those areas. Biomass, like is there a massive amount of fish in that area? So the criteria for that is, and as far as, you know, the methods that you're using and the techniques, what method are you using?
Uh-huh.
It's the 21st century. There's a lot of,
you
have to open your minds. And I was talking to Rick and Pete here before we started. Different places in the world have a totally different concept.
Of sustainability?
Not necessarily of sustainability, but of like, I'm going to go harvest the fish.
Yeah.
So you're really thinking at a 21st century level. Here in the U.S. and some of these countries that are had third-party audits and things like that or understanding about the sustainability of it, they've passed all that criteria and they are working with inside of a structure to harvest that fish at that method, get it transported, get it to the end user in that method. Now, other parts of the world don't play by those rules.
Yeah.
So,
so what you do at American Tuna and on the Millie G and your product's called American Tuna is a sustainable fishery. Would a purseine boat be a sustainable fishery?
Well, there has been some of those fisheries certified sustainable in different parts of the world.
Yeah.
There's no purseining here.
Yeah.
I mean,
but in purseining, if it's sustainable, could be.
Well, yeah, and they do those through stock assessments in the areas where they fish, sure. And I see that here now. There's been different organizations come out with that.
Yeah.
I know that the Don asked about the IPLNF, that's the International Pole and Line Foundation, is they go out and seek and procure and work with around the world. And the people that started it 25 or 30 years ago, some of the principals involved, to just work with those fisheries. So it's, you know, I'm not saying that persaining or, you know, something like that that's certified sustainable is not, and it has to do with the bycatch. Well, bycatch and also with the stock assessment. So are you going to be able to, you know, to catch this much fish in that area and then stop? So
yeah, I got you.
You know, I haven't followed up really closely exactly what they do, but what some is, of those have been, you know, certified.
For sure. Hey, Don, thanks a lot for the phone call this morning. All right, let's head south down to Rancho Leonero. We got our buddy John Ireland on the line. Buenos dias, John.
Good morning, Pedro. Hello, Rick. Jack.
Hey, John.
Good morning.
Well, how's everything down at Rancho Leonero?
Well, you know, beautiful weather, of course. Water's warmed up to 75 degrees. Everything seems to be going on. Yeah, you know, there's been absolutely no pressure. No boats were allowed out up until about Tuesday, last Tuesday. And they're allowing boats to go out and the locals to fish for meat for themselves. And the fishing, of course, has been extraordinary. There's been absolutely no pressure, so there's loads of bait along all the beaches. The sardine, which are actually panfish that we use for bait, are thick along the beaches, actually coming up shore on the sand every morning. And also there's lots of Spanish mackerel around as well. The guys are making their own Spanish mac. They're going out right in front, and pre-dawn, they're going out, I don't know, about 3 in the morning, and fishing a couple hours before first light, and they're picking up really nice yellowtail off the bottom, right in front of the hotel, and then down off of La Rivera, 5 to 30 pounders, but they're bringing in, you know, 5 to 10 fish easily, fishing for the meat. And then striped marlin, of course, off the bump, they're going out there, and they're actually fishing for meat, you know, they're catching one or two and bringing them in to the beach to feed the population there in La Rivera.
Sure.
Gary Barnes Webb has lots of rooster fish run up down the beach, and Gary's been taking advantage of that. He's picked up a couple nice ones on topwater lures just right out in front. One about 25 pounds. He sent me a picture. So,
nice.
Like I say, fishing goes on. The fishing's been very good. You know, overall down there, down by us, it's been a different deal. Everybody's pretty much locked down. We haven't had any real cases of the virus on the East Cape. There's some over in Cabo, but the villages, everyone's they've really locked it down. You know, each individual area, village, Buena Vista, Los Barriles, Santiago, they actually are monitoring people going in and out of town, and anybody from not in the area, they're not letting in or out. So they're being very, very careful about it. So we're hopeful. They're really locked down by me, that's for sure.
So what's the word? Are we going to be able to get Rancho Leonero open here in the near future? What's your thought?
Well, I sure hope so. You know, it's just all about the Mexican government now has gone under lockdown as well, mandatory, so all the hotels are closed down by us. As soon as we get to okay and people can get to us, then we're open. We're ready for business. We're raring to go, of course. You know, we want to get people back on the water and back to business, that's for sure. You know, the airlines are still flying back and forth, which is interesting. Alaska out of San Diego with a connection, no direct flights right now. And then Valaris nonstop, a couple flights a day into Cabo and one into La Paz out of Tijuana. And then there are direct flights out of Los Angeles and San Francisco as well. So you can still get in and out, but it's just a matter of everything opening up. We're hoping, Pete, I'm hoping, you know, June 1st would be my best guess.
Well, so we're hoping that we can get our Let's Talk Hookup Rancho Leonero tournament then.
Yeah, that's for sure. Well, we'd like to say, nothing we want better than to open up and get back to fishing and see everybody. You know, this has been a pretty boring couple of weeks.
John's ready to go fishing.
Ready to get down there and go fishing for sure.
Yeah.
Well, thanks for the update, John. Appreciate that. And keep us posted of what's going on down at Rancho Leonero. And I want to say, don't cancel, just reschedule right now, right?
Exactly. It'd be doing us a big favor. You know, we're lucky at the ranch. We've got such a dedicated crew of old guests that have been coming for years and years and very, very supportive, and I really appreciate that. It really makes a difference for us. And I'm comfortable that when things do lighten up and people can get in and out, because we have, you know, guests that have been coming down for years and years, it's a very familiar territory. So I'm hoping we get back to semi-normal, huh?
Yeah. Well, it sounds like once it opens, it's a safe environment. It sounds like they've done a good job of keeping things in order down there. But I tell you what, nothing I'd rather be doing than sipping a margarita right now at Rancho Llanero.
I've said it before, man. I'll catch a Corona under a palapa at Rancho Llanero right now. No problem.
That's it. Yeah, for sure. So in the meantime, somebody wants to look at booking a trip this year, next year, whatever. How do we get a hold of you, John?
Thanks. It's 800-646-2252 or RanchoLanero.com.
All right. Thanks a lot for the report, John. Stay strong, and we'll hopefully talk to you next week with better news.
Yeah.
You will for sure. You will for sure.
Thanks, well, it's good news. A fish are biting. That's a good thing for sure. Hey, phones are packed. Let's go ahead and jump into it.
You got it, man. Brian calling us up next from Toluca Valley. What's up, Brian? Welcome to Let's Talk Hookup.
Good morning, guys.
Hey, what's up, Brian?
I have a couple questions for you
guys. Good morning.
About the 80s, my first 10-day trip was on the Royal Polaris. I think it was you, Tim Ekstrom, and Will the Deck, and Steve Loomis was running the boat. And I was just wondering if that was you. And then out west, I hear somehow the core has been caught on the long lines. So I was wondering if that's been confirmed.
Yeah, that was me on there. And Tim was on the boat, and God love him. Rollo was still alive, still with us. And Brian was on the boat then. I think it was – I went on the Royal Polaris there for a while with Tim and Brian and Rollo, which is always great. And then right after that, then I'm pretty sure that's right when I got on the – we were just talking about the timeline on that and got on the – I think Norman was still around, Kagawa, and Dave Kagawa was running the Royal Star. So, yeah, it was about that time that I got on the Royal Star. And to answer your question, I hear the same thing, is that they are catching some smaller albacore out there to the southwest of us, some of the longline guys that have come here from Hawaii and that are probably a lot of them born and raised here in San Diego and just want to be by home. And they're running out 1,200 miles or 1,400 miles, whatever it is quite a ways. And they're getting a little sun, which is not unusual. All the tunas, they're buddies, you know, whether it's a big eye, a skipjack and albacore at that point in time before they come up and they're on the surface. So I do hear that, is that the guys are bringing some of those in. So could very well be a precursor to what happens later. But it's not unusual this time of year that those guys get a little sign of them out there. And, and who knows where they're going to end up showing up for the summer months.
We just need them about 1,200 miles to the east. Yeah. 1,200 miles east, we'll be in business.
No, that's right. So, and you know what? People keep asking me the temperatures of the water and stuff. And as soon as I'll never forget the time we were at Ascension, I told some passenger was asking me, he goes, "They ever catch halibut here?" And I go, "No, we don't catch halibut here." I didn't walk away. 5 minutes later, I came back and the guy caught a halibut.
Yeah,
so
right.
There you go. So, I mean, that's just a small thing, but you never know what's going to happen with the conditions and the fish in here. So if that's something you're...
It could happen.
It could happen, yeah.
I still think Pete is on the very best program of being the most accurate predictor of albacore.
Yeah.
And that is just, Pete predicts them every year.
Yeah.
And then when they come, he'll be right.
That's right.
You know what I mean? Like, you know, and if you're wrong, hey, well, whatever. Yeah, you know,
they're coming. Yeah, they're coming this year.
Damn right. Yep. They're coming. They're on their way.
Here they come. Right. All right. Hey, thanks a lot for the call this morning. Appreciate that. Some good stuff. Jax has quite the history, no doubt about it.
You got it.
Jump back in.
Sounds good. How about Tom up next from University City? What's up, Tom? Thanks for joining us this morning.
Hey, good morning, guys.
Morning.
What's up, Tom?
Hey, Jack, I was looking at some pictures of your boat, the Millie G, online, and when it, on the end of water shots, it looks like a very nice, you know, smaller commercial boat. And what I was surprised about is when I saw it out of the water, it looks like the keel goes at least as far down into the water as is the height of the boat off the top of the water. And I was wondering if you could, I don't know how deep the keel is on the Royal Star either, but I was surprised by how deep it appears to go. And I was wondering if you could talk about the design of that and why it's like that.
Great question.
Yeah, no, that's a good question. And that's the reason that most of your commercial boats are not high-speed boats. That's called a displacement hull. In other words, it's got a lot of boat below the water. It's made for carrying cargo. And when you build a boat, like your big tankers and stuff, length is speed. So they're big and wide and deep, but the length ends up helping them with speed the way that they cut through the water, and that's why they put a bulbous bow. You see the bow stick, the underwater pieces stick out. It actually breaks the friction of the water so the boat can move through it better. So, yeah, my boat is 60 feet long, but it's twice as deep as Royal Star or Royal Polaris. I mean, it's 9 foot down to the bottom of the keel.
Wow.
So, I mean, so that's the difference. And most of all your commercial boats, Tom, are single screw. And, yeah, okay, well, there's a chance you could have a problem and not be able to fix it. Yeah, there is. So there is inherent risk in that compared to a sport fishing boat that has, you know, either two main engines or some are single screw, but two main engines or three main engines. It's like, okay, well, one's out. We'll have that taken care of when we get in or when we can. So, yeah, the depth of the boat, and so that's the deal. I mean, if on my boat, if you're making some of the boats are faster, you know, could go 8, 8.5 knots, but it's just you're normally if I'm going 7.5 knots, I'm happy.
You're happy at 7.5.
Yeah. And that has also to do with economy too. I mean, there's a difference. Okay, well, I'm going 0.5 knot faster. Well, am I burning twice as much fuel?
Going 0.5 knot.
Yeah, exactly. See, because you know, a yacht or a sport fishing boat, it's like. A sport fishing boat, you'd call like one of these commercial sport fishing boats here that I'm looking out the window at, are semi-displacement. It means they kind of try to push up out of the water, you know, and they don't, they're not that deep. You know, some of your real high-speed boats or planing boats, the whole boat's going to get pushed up out of the water. Mm-hmm. But with the commercial boats like that, you know, yeah, they're deep. And that has to do with your speed, your kind of pushing a lot of boat through the water underwater.
Yeah. And that's more for cargo than for dealing with weather, or is that all the above?
Exactly. Or? Yeah, and you're right, Ricky, too. So when you get the boat ballasted and trimmed right, you know, you get that water down, you know, weight down below center of gravity down low, it helps you with your stability.
Got it.
You know, so you're getting that, yeah, it absolutely helps with your stability.
So more boat in the water means it's more stable.
Well, yeah, to a certain point. I mean, the weather can get and the ocean can get to whatever it wants to be, and, you know, and that's another variable. But,
sure.
You know, yeah, but normally, yeah, and how you jerk around and how the boat rolls and things like that, sure.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Hey, thanks a lot for the phone call this morning. Now, when you're trolling for albacore, looking for the schools, what speed are you going?
Like 6 knots. I mean, sometimes in heavy weather, you're going slower than that. Yeah. I mean, you're just not going to be able to bang into that if you're fishing in 25 or 30 knots of wind.
So you pull them all the way down to 6 from that high running speed of 7.5.
Yeah, exactly. No, yeah, exactly. That's funny. Yeah, but, you want to come up with a speed so when the fish bites the jig and you pull them in that you don't lose in the line and something also, you know, you want to get the fish excited. You go too slow. The fish is looking up at that like, oh, no, is that a piece of kelp or is that, you know, or is that something I want to eat? So, you know, in the last couple of years, too, we started using a couple of things. So one was called they're like small birds. Mm-hmm. They use in Hawaii and a lot of the tropical areas. Uh-huh. And a lot of times you'll put that up in front of your leader, and it gives that jig just a little more action.
Yeah.
So like the I would have never been a believer. I was like, get that crap out of here. But
it works, huh?
Oh, yeah. And in certain situations, it works really well.
Huh.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Are the trolling lines all pulled in by hand? They have, like, hydraulic reels?
Yeah, you can pull them in by hand, or we have hydraulic reels on the sides of the boats. They're pullers. They're spools. Mm-hmm. So one of the biggest things you have that for is the guys pull a lot of it by hand because you're going to land more of them. You have a little more flex with your hands. I hear the swordfish guys that are out in there pull the line by hand, a lot of them, so that they don't lose it.
Mm-hmm.
But the biggest thing is with those spools is at nighttime, if you have your longest line is 20 fathoms, 120 feet long, mm-hmm. it gets wound up on a spool. It's nighttime.
Yeah.
And otherwise, you're in heavy weather and you stop the boat, you just have all that stuff on the deck or in a milk crate back there. It comes loose and you got a giant tangled ball backlash like you've never seen in your life.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So that's one of the things that's good about it.
So what percentage of your fish are you catching in the rack versus on the troll?
Oh, it just depends. I know Bobby Kiso ran my boat last year for the first time, and he did a great job. Most of that fish was, a lot of it was trolling. Yeah, they caught fish on poles. But, you know, the Millie G and some of the boats here in San Diego and up and down the west coast of the United States can do both. But a lot of times in the bait fishing in the pole and line type of year, time of year from September on, you could catch as much there in that month or month and a half period as you do in the 2 or 2 to 3 months prior to that.
So trolling. The early part of the season is pretty much all troll.
Yeah, so just think of it this way. When the fish first show up, they're scattered out.
Mm-hmm.
So you're moving along at 6 knots, and there's one over there, and his buddy's over there, and you get one, something like that. Or there might be groups of them in little tighter spots or something like that. But that fish is just coming up to the surface and just trying to figure out where it wants to be. By the end of the year, and when it goes to, like, bait season, the fish start getting in a group in schools, and then they're going to want to eat a bunch because they're going to, you know, take a hike.
Mm-hmm.
And at that point in time is when there's, you know, it's chow daddy. So they're all getting together in groups and schools, and then they're going to take off from there. And then, you know, you'll see less and less of them. They're gone. But so they fatten themselves up. They're up there. If there's something really to eat, they're going to eat it.
Yeah,
that's
yeah.
cool.
For sure. So,
well, I just think that's so
yeah,
cool, man.
So that's, I mean, we're just scratching the surface.
I love it.
Ricky. Yeah, for
that's
sure.
very fun. Well, hey, when we come back, we got a whole lot more Let's Talk Hookup coming your way. More of your phone calls. We're going to check in with the Catch Report. Lots of great stuff coming your way. You stay tuned. It's Let's Talk Hookup on the Let's Talk Hookup app and radio network.
Turner's Outdoorsman, Southern California's number one shooting, hunting, and fishing tackle retailer since 1971, is right in your neighborhood. Now with stores throughout Southern, Central, and Northern California. No one does it better. Turner's Outdoorsman brings you the best prices and selection, plus a knowledgeable staff that will help make your day on the water or in the field more fun. Stop by your neighborhood Turner's Outdoorsman. To find a location nearest you, check the web at turners.com and sign up for special deals and more.
This is Captain Art Taylor of the Searcher. 2020 is the golden anniversary of Cape Polaris and Searcher. Come help us celebrate 50 amazing years in sport fishing. Searcher has a great crew, awesome food, air-conditioned cabins and galley, and an RSW system to preserve your catch. Our 2020 schedule is available now, so this is a golden opportunity to make your reservation online at searchersportfishing.com or call Celia or Callie at 619-226-2400.
Dana Lanning in Mission Bay is truly the one-stop shop for a great day on the water. This is Chelsea. Come see me and our expert fishing staff for just about anything you need for a great day of on-the-water fun. Looking for a fishing charter? Dana Lanning has you covered with the Blackjack, perfect for up to 4 anglers, or the Impulse with up to 6. Dana Lanning has a huge selection with everything you need to catch small bay bass or giant tuna. We will be sure to set you up with the right gear. We even offer reel repair and Mexican and California fishing licenses. Don't forget the amazing deli at Dana Lanning with all the food, ice, and beverages you need to complete your day. Need freshwater tackle? Head to East County Bait and Tackle with all the finest rods and reels, the hottest freshwater lures, and live bait. ECBT has an amazing staff who love to share their passion for fishing. East County Bait and Tackle is located at the end of the 67 freeway on Main Street in Lakeside, and Dana Lanning is next to the Dana Launch Ramp on San Diego's Mission Bay. Check out danalanding.com for more details.
At Olokai, we handcraft Hawaiian-inspired footwear, finding inspiration in Hawaiian culture and craftsmanship. Fishing is at the heart of the Hawaiian culture today, just as it's been for centuries. Generations of fishermen and women cast inshore and offshore in search of the next big catch. No matter how they do it, there's attention to detail and respect for the ocean that guides their passion. At Olokai, they believe in the same attention to detail when crafting the highest quality shoes and sandals. Olokai's water-friendly Nohea Moku slip-on shoe features razor sipping with non-marking rubber for extra grip on the deck, the dock, or the rocks. And it's designed for easy on-off barefoot wear. And when it comes to sandals that perform, Olokai's new Ulele provides the comfort and durability of a sneaker for those long days on the boat or shore. Whether you're loading up the boat, shoreline fishing from the rocks, or scoping out the best place to set up on the beach, Olokai takes you further. Shop or find your local retailer at olokai.com.
Welcome back to Let's Talk Hookup. Having a great time talking albacore, talking commercial fishing with Jack. This is a great show,
yeah,
Pete.
Indeed. And Grant Christensen had he just sent me a question. He has a question for Jack. Grant, of course, runs our casting contest at our Let's Talk Hookup San Diego County live remotes, which we're still planning on doing the very kickoff for that at Encinitas Ford on May 16th, Saturday, May 16th. I mean, it's tentative.
Yeah,
but
of course.
That's the plan. It's on the plan right now to be at Encinitas Ford with Mark Wheeler and the gang Saturday, May 16th. And we'll keep you posted on that. It'll be your first chance to win that 8-day limited load trip on the Searcher in the fall.
So cool.
Yeah,
man.
That's going to be a good one for sure. But Grant want to know when you're in the rack, you use bait. How do you catch your bait?
Well, you have a net, which the Italians, it's an Italian name. It's called Lampara. And it's a round haul net. It doesn't have purse on a purse cable or a purse line on the bottom of it. And basically what it does is that there's two walls or fences. It's real small. It's, a big one would be 50 fathoms, 300 feet on each side of the wing. And what it does, and that's big 4 or 5 inch mesh, all it does is scare the bait. Once you try to set it around the ball of bait, and then that is supposed to scare it and herd it back towards the back of the net, which is called the sack area. And then that right there is smaller mesh, and as you pull it up, that baits get, and it goes back there to hide like in a cave, you pull it up. But those nets in particular are such fine mesh, and it's not like real industrial type equipment, because you want that bait to not be harmed. You want it to stay alive. You want it not to have its scales knocked off. You don't want it to have its slime knocked off. So what you'll do is you pull that net up. You scoop, sometimes let's just say if you could take 200 scoops on the boat, you might take 100 scoops, scoop it just like you do with the bait receivers, right out of there, put it in the wells, and then let the rest of it go because it's handled like that, and then try to catch some more because it takes a while for it to be in the net. That's if in a best case scenario, because you want the bait to live. It's not unlike you have Everingham here catches the bait for Dana Point and all of San Diego and stuff. They do essentially the same thing except on a bigger level because they supply a lot more people.
But
this is originally how those nets were made. And there's a very few old guys here, some of the Italians here in San Diego, and I don't know any of them that are still working on the nets, and the Portuguese that worked on those kinds of net. It was a real talent.
And what kind of bait are you catching?
Anchovies.
It's anchovies.
Sure.
Yeah.
Is that a difficult, fishing with a net? Like, was that one of the more difficult, skills to learn? I mean, obviously you were so good at fishing tuna and you know where to go and how to troll them and how to catch them. But, fishing with a net, I'm sure, is a totally different feeling.
So many things go wrong.
I bet. It's just such a different leap from the other things that you did.
So you're trying to – some of the boats that are bigger boats have a small little skiff, that has – it's custom and it has an outboard motor in the middle of the boat. It's not on the stern, because then you can put the net back there. And the net, the pile of the net's small. It's as big as we have plastic tables here in Pete's office.
6-foot plastic table. I want to make that very clear. 6-footers.
Yes, indeed.
But the net would pile up about half the size of that. It's small. So they put them in a little skiff to go do it. In my case, and some of the other guys' cases, you put the net on the stern of the boat, which is a big boat to make a turn like that. Yeah, so to answer Ricky's question, it's almost like two different worlds. You got going to look for the fish, to go catch an albacore or go catch yellowfin or skipjack or something like that to use live bait. And then the other part of it is to be able to catch the bait. So, yeah, there's, sometimes you see the bait on top flipping. Sometimes you only see it on the sonar or the meter. Sometimes it's hiding and it looks just like the bottom on the meter, except there's a ton of it down there. There's a lot of things that can go wrong with that.
That's the first thing that crossed my mind is like that is a completely, if you can, you could be on a sport boat and drag a Zucker feather with a 6-0 and catch an albacore, or you can drag it with a hand line and catch an albacore, but trying to catch an anchovy with a net is such a completely different thing. I can't imagine.
And do you catch it inshore? Do you catch it where you're catching the albacore? Is it a different area?
No. It's inshore. So the nets are so small and just are not very deep for the Lampara nets is that you're inshore. So the bottom actually, if it's, when you set the net in sandy bottom, if it's close to the bottom, the bait maybe won't go out. Now, sometimes you could spend days trying to catch it, use as much. It's the same as fishing for bluefin or albacore. Yeah. It's like, there they are. Oh, no, they aren't. You know what I mean? So it's sometimes you could spend for days trying to catch it. So normally, Pete, to answer your question, inshore.
Inshore.
Yeah. Offshore is no good. There's too many critters and things. Yeah. And most of if you come up on an anchovy ball or something like that offshore, there's always sharks and things and other kind of fish in it, and they're all out there having a big chow time.
Yeah.
And so if you do that, then everything is just going to eat your net and everything else. So the nets are important to you. You're not even going to do it.
Yeah.
You
want
to
like
go
the net's
to
so
where
delicate,
it's clean. You, and that's where, yeah, exactly. It's just you're done. Yeah. Then your ability to go on to the next step is gone.
Yeah.
So you have
to
like watch that really close.
Oh, yeah. Well, let's go ahead and jump into the phone.
Great. Yeah, you got it, man. The phones are packed up. If you want to get your opportunity to talk to Jack, 833-288-0973. How about we talk to John calling us from Los Alamitos this morning. Good morning, John. Welcome to the show.
Good morning, guys. Hello, Jack.
Good morning.
My question is to you, Jack. What's the best trolling feather, and does color matter?
You know, a lot of the tuna scientists say that the only thing that the tuna sees is in shades of blues or grays or things like that. I mean, it's just not like you can question the fish to see exactly what they see. But there's a ton of that stuff. I mean, you'll find something, you know. I mean, I can't say one way or the other. We use hex heads a lot because they're durable. And, you know, I don't even know if they still make them, Ricky Zookers and things of that sort.
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah. But what happens, and I remember when I was a kid and always, you know, remember this. Sometimes, let's just say if you have a package of 100 Zookers, there's one that wiggles just a little different than everything else. I remember one time John Grabowski, when we were little kids, Don made him get in the water and go, we lost it in the propeller. We were stopped on the new Loan, and Don made him jump over the side and go get the thing back.
That was the lucky one. It always got bit.
And I don't think it has to do with lucky, Ricky. Yeah. It's getting a little wiggle to it, something different. So any of that kind of stuff, colors. And you know what? I'm not real hung up on the colors. I'm hung up on speed and how the thing jumps around in the water and what kind of bubble pattern it makes. And, you know, so I would just put out a mixed bag of what you think is right as far as trolling feathers. And I know when we were kids, sometimes we trolled a lot smaller trolling feathers than I see around now, which we'd call pinheads. You know, they were pearl head jigs. And I remember that was small on the sport fishing, and they worked a lot better at certain times of the year. So, I mean, it's hard to give you a definitive answer to that, but I would just mix it up and pay attention to what you're getting success on.
That was such a fun time that I hope we get to go back to.
Like, trolling for albacore.
Yeah, when I first started working at the shop, that was all we did. Like, your summertime shift started in, you know, whenever you started tying albacore feathers. You know, they'd take a piece of 80-pound and tie a hook on one end and swivel on the other, and you would do that for your entire 8 hours. And then that night, when all the boats gone, everyone would be gone. You know, 100 feathers a night would go. Like, it was that was just really fun times. Little teeny
and
black and purple jet heads. And,
oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, I've just been fortunate that I got to do what I really liked my whole life. So, I mean, not many people can say that. So, I mean, it's nothing's easy. Nothing's easy for everybody out there or whatever they do for a living, too. So you make it what you want to make out of it.
No doubt.
Hey, when we come back, we got more coming your way. You stay tuned. You're listening to Let's Talk Hookup on the Let's Talk Hookup app and radio network. Hey, it's time for the 30-second Power Pro Seminar. Here's the hot tip for those of us that like to fish with small reels for big fish. Fill your spools with Power Pro Max Quattro. It's 25% thinner than standard Power Pro. That means you're going to get more line on that small reel. Plus, you can fly line your bait more effectively. Here's another tip about Power Pro Max Quattro. Your casting distance will increase in addition to increasing your spool capacity. So downsize your tackle and use Power Pro Max Quattro. Check powerpro.com for more information.
Hey, this is Rosie with Cedros Sport Fishing. Cedros Island is considered the yellowtail and calico bass fishing capital in the world, and nobody does it better than Cedros Sport Fishing. We are committed to providing first-class service to our guests, as well as an unforgettable fishing experience. We have made a good thing even better. We now have a direct flight departing through the CBX in San Diego. Leave home in the morning and fish in the afternoon. We have a beautiful waterfront lodge with first-class accommodations and meals. What are you waiting for? Call me at 619-772-7577. Or check out cedrosportfishing.com. Book soon. Trips are going fast.
We all need to get around, but we all need something different from our vehicles. Your San Diego County Ford dealers have you covered if you're looking for a new truck this month. Plus, it's SUV season, so they have great deals for everyone. Whether it's a new EcoSport that is nimble and fun around town, or the Ford Explorer that is capable of putting a boat in the water and has seating for seven, Ford has you covered. Ford trucks and SUVs aren't just powerful and legendary. They have the latest technology that helps you seamlessly connect your smartphone and ensure you're safe on the road. Features like Pro Trailer Backup Assist on trucks are truly a game changer at the ramp, helping you back up a trailer by simply turning a knob on the dash and doing the hard work for you. So check out all the great deals during SUV season and save some money on the right gear for you. Learn more at buyfordnow.com or visit your San Diego County Ford dealers today. They'll be glad to hook you up.
Seakeeper, the leader in marine stabilization, has launched its newest, smallest, and most radically different model, the Seakeeper 1. Now, for the first time, stabilization is available for boats as small as 23 feet. The Seakeeper 1 is designed to eliminate up to 95% of boat roll on vessels 23 to 30 feet with a fresh new look. The Seakeeper 1 has a compact flush mount installation and runs on 12-volt battery power. Installation is a breeze. It can fit under almost any seat, and now your skiff can enjoy the comfort and enjoyment that only a Seakeeper equipped boat can provide. Check out the Seakeeper demo boat at upcoming shows and arrange a free test ride. Seakeeper has changed the lives of many Southern California anglers, including Pete Gray, and will allow you to stay on the fishing grounds when others need to head back to port. Visit seakeeper.com/take a ride to arrange a demo. Eliminate up to 95% of boat roll on your trailer boat. Seakeeper. Once you feel it, you'll never boat without it.